We'll call this meeting to order. My name is Tom Swain. I've been asked to convene this meeting. I'd like to begin with an introduction of members. Kathy?
I'm Kathy Meyerly from Rochester, Minnesota.
And a governor's appointee.
Governor's appointee, yes. And Paula Leidy, Stillwater, Minnesota, governor appointee.
I'm John Stanek from Minneapolis. I'm an appointee of the Supreme Court.
Ezell Jones from Minneapolis. I'm a governor's appointee.
And I'm Tom Swain. I'm an appointee of the Supreme Court. And
By all means, please. I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Our office provides administrative support to the council. I'd ask members who aren't familiar to, if you can, pull your microphones down so that you'll have to buy in accordingly.
I'm John Stabler, governor appointee from Perm, Minnesota.
I'm Senator Keith Langseth, the appointee of the Majority Leader of the Senate, and I'm from Glendon, Minnesota. It's near Moorhead.
I am Stan Durda, governor appointee from Apple Valley, Minnesota.
My name is Craig Schaefer, and I'm a governor's appointee from Deephaven, Minnesota.
Our membership total is 16, including 8 appointees of the governor, 2 of the Supreme Court, and 6 in the legislature, 3 in the House, 3 in the Senate. We have a quorum of 9. How many more are we expecting?
We should have 5 more. 6 more.
4 or 5 of whom are legislators who were apt to come later. We're not sure when they'll come.
As their schedules permit.
As their schedules permit. The first official piece of business is to elect a chair. We can wait for more to come. Although I'm not sure what that accomplished.
I would nominate Tom Swain.
And I would second that motion.
Are there other nominations? And certainly don't be hesitant because this is a wide open field. And I'm sure others, John Stanek has chaired this before. I've had the pleasure.
I'm supporting the Swain candidate.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what the portent of that is looking ahead, but I'm willing to take the chance. Any additional nominations? If not, we'll close the nominations and cast how many support of the nomination of me for chair?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposing it? Okay, thank you. I'm honored, I hope. Administrative matters. Sandy Keene from the LCC, would you orient us, please, on... Well, first, we welcome an additional member. Please, sir, would you...
Let me introduce myself.
Oh.
Okay. I'm State Representative Fran Bradley from Rochester. I'm chair of the Health Committee, and unfortunately, we're in the middle right now in Ways and Means and presenting the health budget, so that's why I'm a little late and probably need to zip back there even.
Well, thank you for attending.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid.
Oh, excuse me. Senator Scheid, I'm sorry.
And that's me. I'm Senator Linda Scheid, and chair of the Commerce Committee in the Senate, and this will be my first time serving on this council.
And your district, area generally?
I live in Brooklyn Park, represent half of that city and all of Brooklyn Center.
Thank you. And they've just elected me as chair, so we're underway. Sandy?
Most of you received the email from me and the meeting materials. I was just going to briefly go over the expense forms for those of you who can fill those out. Legislators don't have those in their packets because they're here for session. So our fiscal services staff would like to process your reimbursement forms as quickly as possible, so we ask that you fill it out as best as you can, and I'll be available after the meeting if you have any questions. To start with, you can make sure you fill out the date, and the description of the activity would be the Compensation Council. Place of meeting would be the state office building, and then your mileage from the destination you left from this morning to St. Paul. If you're not sure of the exact miles, don't worry about filling that in. Our staff will calculate that for you. And lodging, if you live more than 50 miles from St. Paul and have to stay overnight for any reason, you are eligible to submit reimbursement forms for lodging. We ask that you submit a receipt with the expense form. And, of course, we encourage you, as you noted in my email, we encourage you as much as possible in times of tight budget constraints to stays somewhere and use good judgment as far as lodging goes. I gave you information for the Kelly Inn, which a lot of our council members and legislators utilize, and we ask that you get the lowest rate possible, ask for a government rate or any discounts that you qualify for. The next part is very important, the per diem. If you want to claim per diem, you have to circle yes or no, one way or the other way. Otherwise, you'll get a phone call from our fiscal services staff, and it could delay processing if you don't have that filled out. And then also, if you are traveling throughout the day and require meals, breakfast, lunch, or dinner, that is on the back side of your expense form, and you can fill that in and then add up the total and bring that to the front of the expense form under other expenses. One thing I forgot to mention about the per diem, if you are a state employee, you do not qualify for per diem, and there is a box down below towards the bottom of the form that you'll need to fill out that portion. At the end of the meeting today, the chair will sign all the expense forms, so you could turn those into me, and I'll make sure that our chair gets those signed before you leave today, and we'll process those as soon as possible. Because this is the first time that we've met, we will also need your Social Security numbers to get those entered into our system. You can give those to me before you leave today, or in the memo that I sent you, I also provided you with phone numbers for our fiscal services staff if you would prefer calling them directly. And again, if you have any questions at the end of the meeting, I'll be available.
Are there questions? If not, next is why are we here? And Tom Bottern, if I pronounce that right, Tom?
That's correct.
I got the Tom right. I've had a little experience with that. From Senate Council on Research to review the purpose of this council. Tom?
Members, my name is Tom Bottern. I'm the Senate Counsel for the State Government, State and Local Government Policy Committee and the State Government Budget Division in the Senate. And I'll walk you through what the duties of the Compensation Council are. You'll find my memorandum in your packet. It's dated February 8th, and the heading is Statutory Duties of the Compensation Council. And I'll try to strike the right balance here. I'm sure there are those of you who are very familiar with what the duties are and those of you who are new to this. So I don't intend to take a great deal of time to do this. There is additional information in the memorandum. The duties of the Compensation Council are set out in statute in Section 15A.082, and the history goes all the way back to 1983. The fundamental purpose is to make salary recommendations to the legislature, originally simply for constitutional officers, members of the legislature, and judges. And in 1994, that was expanded to include salary ranges for the heads of state and metropolitan agencies. Right now, the only metropolitan agency heads that are affected by that are the chairs of the Met Council and the Metropolitan Airports Commission. The council's recommendations are due May 1st in each odd-numbered year, and the agency head salaries are fixed as a percentage of the governor's salary. The recommendations take effect on January 1st of the next odd-numbered year, so translating that to this session, that would mean that they would take effect January 1st, 2007, and that's only if the legislature has appropriated the money necessary to implement them. The council can also recommend one subsequent increase taking effect on January 1st of the next year, which would be 2008 in this instance. And as I suggested, obviously the legislature can modify or reject the recommendations primarily through the power of appropriation. And the recommendations for agency head salary ranges are effective retroactively to January 1st of the year when they're made. So that's a little bit different than how it would work for constitutional officers or members of the legislature. The council is instructed to consider a number of factors in making its recommendations. The primary factors would include the amount of compensation that's necessary in both government service and the private sector to retain persons with similar qualifications. Another consideration would be the ability of the state to pay those recommended levels, and another consideration would be the amount needed to attract and retain persons with the necessary experience and competence. And other factors that would be included in making recommendations for legislators would include average length of legislative sessions and the amount of work required of legislators during the interim. In the past, people have wondered why the recommendations for legislators, constitutional officers, and judges don't take effect until 2 years after they're submitted. That's because of a requirement in the Constitution, which says that you have to have an election in between an increase in legislative salaries that's provided in law until it takes effect. And that's why the recommendations for legislators wouldn't take effect until 2007. There's no similar restriction in the Constitution on pay increases for constitutional officers or judges, but apparently the legislature has seen fit to, in setting up the Compensation Council, require it to adhere to the same requirements for those groups. Once the council submits its recommendations, it ceases to exist as provided under Subdivision 6 of the statute. And the deadline for submitting those recommendations is, again, May 1st. The council can make other recommendations and has done so. They don't have any official standing. And recommendations submitted after May 1st would also lack official standing. Finally, as I've suggested previously, if the council did continue to meet after May 1st and submitted recommendations after that point, it would not be prohibited from doing so, but there would be no per diem payments, expense reimbursements, et cetera, for any of the work that followed May 1st. And now I'll refer you to the second memorandum. I'm just going to skip ahead to that with your permission, Mr. Chair. It's a little out of order in the agenda, but while I'm up here, I think I'll get to it. The second memorandum I prepared is titled Total Compensation Packages, and I'll be rather brief with this one. This is intended to highlight for you that in addition to their salaries, constitutional officers, legislators, and judges do receive other benefits from the state that the members should consider along with the salaries in determining recommendations for compensation. And beginning with constitutional officers, the retirement plan is a little complicated. I think the important thing to remember is that, and actually at this point, I believe all constitutional officers have been elected first after June 30th, 1997. There's a cutoff date there that affects how the retirement plan operates, and officers elected after that date are included in the unclassified plan, which is a defined contribution plan. The state contributes 6% of their salary and the employee 4%. And there's some information there on how it operates for officers elected before that date. And other benefits constitutional officers receive would include the health insurance benefits, dental insurance, term life coverage. Governor's compensation also includes the use of the residence, a car, and driver. Legislators under a plan that operates quite similar to the constitutional officers, at least with respect to those elected after June 30th, 1997. Again, they would be included in the unclassified plan. And that's the same distribution of same proportional salary contribution from the state and from their own salary. There are a number of members who were elected before that date, and the plan that covers them is somewhat more complex. I won't go into great detail on that. There's more information available if you would like that. The legislators also receive the insurance benefits I described from the state that the constitutional officers receive, and also receive per diem expenses, housing allowance, travel expenses, and postage allowance. And those amounts are set by each house by rule at the beginning of each session. Then finally, moving to the judges, they also have a retirement plan that's substantially different from the ones I've described for the legislators and constitutional officers. The key thing here is that there are judges who are covered by Social Security. Their contribution rate is 8%. For those who are not, the state contributes 8.15%. Or excuse me, the judges contribute 8.15%, and the state contributes 20.5%. And the benefits are determined on a high five basis with a 2.7% calculation factor for service before July 1st, 1980, and 3.2% from that date. I don't know if there are any questions on these materials. I've gone through them rather quickly, but there is more information available if you would like it.
Questions? You've been around since the beginning, haven't you? I've been around since almost. Would you shed a little additional light on what prompted this council to come into being in 83?
Mr. Chair and members, Actually, I think I would defer to Mr. Watson, who has been here since the beginning.
Thank you, Tom. Welcome, Peter.
Mr. Chairman, members of the council, my name is Peter Watson. I'm Senate counsel. I have indeed worked for the Senate for a number of years, including the time before there was a compensation council. I currently work for the Finance Committee and the Rules Committee and the Committee on Elections, also the Committee on Capital Investment. The Compensation Council was created after the legislature had gone through a series of years where in some years no action was taken with regard either to elected official salaries or agency head salaries. And with a number of years having gone by, then there would be a bill introduced for a huge increase in people's salaries, and that was always controversial, and sometimes it would pass and sometimes it was not. But it was always a very rough process, politically bruising process. And the legislative leadership in the early 1980s thought that these bumps could be smoothed out if, rather than going for many years without increases and then having a huge increase, it could have a council that would bring some outside expertise to bear, a group of people who was not self-interested in the salary levels being recommended, and could recommend increases on a regular basis, basically to keep up with inflation, and where they noticed that there were things that were out of order from an equitable point of view, they could recommend those adjustments as well. So they thought steady, modest increases would be a good idea. They set up the Compensation Council, which has essentially the same membership now as it did then, and they made their first set of recommendations in 1983, and as I say in my memo, or 1984, the recommendations were due. For the very first and only time, the recommendations of the Compensation Council were adopted as submitted. It's not been quite as smooth ever since then. And the following pages of my memo, pages 2 through 6, give the history of each council and what it recommended and what the legislature did with those recommendations. I won't go into the detail of those. The general pattern has been that the council has recommended these modest increases, and sometimes the legislature has postponed the effective date by a year or maybe two, or sometimes only 6 months. Sometimes they have brought down a percentage from 3 to 2.5. Sometimes they have said that where the council recommended a certain percentage increase, well, it can be that percent, but no more than the average of the across-the-board increases that have been negotiated through the collective bargaining process with the various unions that represent state employees. There have been some periods when a number of years went by between recommendations that were adopted by the legislature, and Greg will have a chart when I'm done to show you the historical pattern of when those recommendations, those changes in salaries, have gone into effect. I think it's fair to say that the recommendations of the council have generally been followed, even though with some delay and some modification. The council has come up with suggestions for changes in the relative ranking of the various elected positions, and it has developed a scheme, a pattern of recommendations that the legislature has generally followed. But like I say, there's sometimes been a delay of 1 or 2 or 3 or more years before those recommendations get adopted. To get back to my memo and just the very first page and the second paragraph, Mr. Bodder mentioned the timing of the recommendations, when they're due and when they go into effect. And the 2-year delay on the effective date of the recommendations has caused some confusion for past council. So let me just repeat that the recommendations that you're making are not for salary increases to go into effect right away, but not until January of 2007. And as that second paragraph shows, the Constitution prevents increases for legislators from going into effect until there has been an intervening election of the House of Representatives. So it would be constitutionally impossible for legislators to take any increase before 2007. The constitutional language on the executive branch and the judicial branch do not have that limitation, but it's the statute that set up the Compensation Council that says we are going to treat all three branches worth of elected officials in the same way. Let's see. The most recent recommendations by a Compensation Council were the council appointed in 2001, and their recommendations appear on the bottom of page 5 and the top of page 6. And they were acting in an environment where the recommendations of the 1999 council had not yet been adopted. So they were in this awkward position of having to first recommend that those 1999 increases go into effect and then provides for some additional adjustments to allow for the passage of two more years. This council is in the fortunate position that at least most of the recommendations of the 2001 council were adopted in some form by the legislature, and what was done is shown there on page 6, the 6.5% increases for members of the judiciary, and adjusting the salaries of the constitutional officers to be certain percentages of the salaries of the governor. However, there were no changes in legislative salaries enacted then. Now, you're in the unfortunate position now of 4 years having gone by rather than two, so it may be that the percentage amounts that you're talking about will be higher as a result, or maybe not. The chart that Greg will explain in a couple of minutes will show how long it's been since the last adjustments in the governor's salary and the other constitutional officer's salary and the judges and the legislature. And they're quite different. They're definitely not all together. So that's my history of the Compensation Council. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
As a result of council recommendations over the course of time, salaries for constitutional officers and for agency heads now relate as a percentage to the governor's salary, which wasn't the case initially. Correct?
Yes.
So all those salaries key off of the governor's salary.
Yes.
Questions?
If we have a question, just kind of...
Please.
Peter, if I can, just a curiosity more than anything else. In 95, the agency heads were considered for the first time. How did that come about? Was it an expansion of the council's activity by the council, or was there activity from the governor that asked for that expansion? Again, it was just curiosity.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you may remember this better than I, but as I recall, the Commissioner of Employee Relations came in and made a presentation to the council about the need for some changes, and the council discussed that and said, I think that may be outside our jurisdiction, but I think that we should do this, and so they made the recommendations.
Fair
and
enough.
I believe it was after that happened that the legislature amended the law to include the agency heads.
That's also my recollection, Mr. Derda. Welcome, Senator Ortman.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you. Agenda has you next in this department, Greg.
Mr. Chair and members, I think the next item in your packet is a spreadsheet that is entitled Salaries of Minnesota Officials. This goes into some graphic description of what has happened to salaries of elected officials for the last 10 years. The constitutional officers are listed first, and then members of the judiciary, and then legislators. The governor's salary was set at $120,300 in 1998 as a result of the 97 Comp Council recommendation, and that salary has not changed since that time. The other constitutional officers used to have their salaries set in law, as did the governor, but as was just mentioned, there was a change made in law so that those salaries are now set as a percentage of the governor's salary. Presumably, if the governor's salary is increased, so would these other officials. That recommendation was made originally by the council in both 99 and 2001, and it was implemented in 2001. The members of the judicial branch elected officials are next on this spreadsheet and lists each of the offices that are included there. As you can see, salaries for judges have increased more steadily over the last 10 years than the other positions. The other sort of unique feature is that in July of 99 and January of 2000, judges received an increase that was tied to the increases received by state employees who received increases in their collective bargaining agreements. The increase was the average of the across-the-board increase that state employees received. There was a fairly complicated formula by which that was determined. It was calculated, I think, by the Department of Employee Relations and then implemented by the judicial branch. The third category is salaries for legislators. Their current salary is $31,140. That level was adopted in January of 1999 as a result of a 1997 compensation council. Salaries for the legislatures haven't changed since that time.
That does it?
That does it, Mr. Chair.
So the last adjustment for the governor was in 1998, which then affected all constitutional officers and agency heads.
Yep.
Last for the legislators was in 99, and there have been more recent adjustments for the judiciary, the most recent being January 1 of 04.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The last increase received by the judges in 04 was actually recommended by the Comp Council in 99 and 01 and enacted into law in 2001. So there's a three-year delay.
Questions, observations? For your information, anybody choosing to speak, please just raise your hand. I'll try to be alert. Senator Langtha.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering, it goes back to 1995. With legislators, and I suppose I should know, I was there, but when was the last increase prior to 95?
'94. No. Well, in 91 it went up. You're talking about legislators now, salaried senator?
What's that?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Senator Langseth, we've got a salary history that goes farther back, but I didn't print that so that the print that was on the spreadsheet would be large enough to be readable. I can get that number for you later.
But in 91, it went from 26,395 to 27,979, and it held there for 4 years until it was adjusted in 95 to 29,657, and then in 99 to its current level of 31,1.
Okay.
Mr. Gerda?
Yes. In the original materials that I think Mr. Watson sent us, there was a description of an agency head that went to 130% of the governor, and that was supported as long as the funds for that additional beyond the 95 or what have you was supported elsewhere. Where did those funds come from?
That's the Minnesota Zoo, I believe. I think that state support is limited to 95% of the governor's salary, and I'm not sure what the authorization was of the legislature in establishing the total salary, but it was predicated on private support representing the difference. But does that mean that by law the salary for the zoo head cannot exceed 130, no matter how much private funds are raised?
That's where I was curious.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's correct. The zoo, as you know, charges admission fees, and they're supposed to get by on a modest state appropriation plus admission fees, plus there's a Minnesota Zoo Foundation whose purpose is to raise private contributions for the support of the zoo. And I assume that the idea is that the private benefactors of the zoo would come up with the additional money over and above the 95% of the salary of the government.
But even if they raise more, Mr. Watson, they would not be able to pay the zoo head more than 130.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, in terms, that's the actual salary compensation. Do we know if the benefits then that would go along with that, which would be the additional pension contribution, would also have to come from the private funds, or would those continue to be eligible under the state funds?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Meyerly, I'm not sure about that, but the pension would be the normal state pension.
Okay.
But the limitations there are on creative ways of getting around the salary cap. I'm not sure how they apply to the director of the zoo.
Okay, thank you. Next is agency head salary ranges, and I believe you're substituting for Mr. Shepherd, Mark? Greg?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepherd was unable to be here today, so I was going to describe the memos that he provided for the council's benefit. The second major task that you have is to recommend to the legislature any revisions to the salary ranges for heads of state agencies. You are not to make recommendations about specific salaries, but instead the salary ranges that are applied to them. Currently, the maximum that can be paid to a head of a state agency is 95% for the larger agencies, those that are considered to be cabinet level. In addition, there are a number of smaller agencies whose maximum salary is 85% of the governor's salary. Generally, those are the pension funds and a couple of smaller agencies. And then there's a small group, actually just has one agency in it currently, that is for the chair of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. You may be interested in knowing that the actual salaries that these agency heads receive are proposed by the appointing authority, in most cases the governor, but in some cases there's a board, such as for the State Board of Investment or for the various state pension funds. Those appointing authorities propose increases to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which is a joint House-Senate body. That body can review and implement the increases on an interim basis. The full legislature later needs to pass a bill ratifying those increases, or the salaries revert to the former level. Summary from Mr. Shepherd has a listing of the current salaries of most of the agency heads on both the front and the back side. It might be worth noting that for almost all of the heads of state agencies, their salaries are about $108,000, which is somewhat below the maximum that they could be paid. The maximum they could be paid is about $114,000, so they're about $6,000 below the maximum. Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepherd also drafted a memo to the council describing what other salaries are affected by salaries within the council's jurisdictions. Sometimes members want to know what impact a possible increase for an agency head or for a constitutional officer might have on other public employee salaries, and this memo is intended to address that. In state agencies, the salary of the head of the agency is the limit on the compensation that an employee of that agency can receive. There is a provision for an exception, but generally the salary of the agency head is the maximum that an employee of that agency can receive. There are also a number of limitations on sort of quasi-state offices that are listed in the second bullet. The second page of Mr. Shepherd's memo describes the relationship and salary between...
This is February 8th memo.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The second page has a listing of the relationship in salaries for executive branch judges and how they relate to salaries that are determined by this council in the judicial branch. And there are a number of administrative judge positions, such as the tax court judge and administrative law judges. Their salaries are all set as a percentage of the district court judges. And then finally, Mr. Chair and members, on the third page of Mr. Shepherd's memo, he points out that for local government employees, cities and counties, the maximum that they can receive in compensation is limited to 95% of the salary of the governor. That applies to county administrators, city managers, that sort of thing.
With limited exceptions.
Yes, Mr. Chair, there's a provision that allows for waivers to be granted by the Commissioner of Employee Relations. And over time, the legislature has exempted groups of employees from that limit, such as school district employees or employees of city or county hospitals.
And this exhibit that's attached reports the current salaries of agency heads, correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. This is a salary history for the last 10 years for each of the state agencies. Most of the heads, there's a spreadsheet that's also landscape. that says agency head salaries, the LCC subcommittee on employee relations. This shows the history for the last 10 years, roughly. Most heads of cabinet-level agencies have not received an increase since August of 2000. It is up to, as I said earlier, it's up to the governor to propose increases for these commissioners. Neither Governor Ventura nor Governor Pawlenty have done that since August of 2000.
But as the table at the bottom indicates, those in Group 1 who are currently receiving $108,000 are not at the max, which would be $114,000 or 95% of the governor, and that's discretionary with the governor.
Mr. Chair, that's correct, with the caveat that if the governor wants to increase those salaries, he has to propose them to the Legislative Coordinating Commission and get interim approval.
Okay. Clear to everybody? Questions? Senator Tried?
Since with some experience, I've learned that we're the only state that does this.
Which part, please?
Pardon me?
Only state that does.
The only state that applies the 95% of the governor's salary standard. Or threshold or cap on salaries all the way to the local level. And I understand there are some exceptions, but I'm wondering if Mr. Hubinger or someone who's been on this council longer than I have, which has been about 45 minutes, can describe how that came to be. I think it didn't start with the governor's salary, but just a little history of how Minnesota decided to lead the nation with this policy.
There may be some question about the use of the term lead then also, I detect. Peter, you know, my memory only goes so far. I'm trying to recall what the circumstances were that led to this. In addition to what you were just describing, the legislature in 94 said to this council, take over looking at agency heads in addition to your other challenge. There were specific salary. Are you going to be able to help us on this, Commissioner Ludeman?
I think I might. In a loose definition, I may, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Watson might know the history
better. Let's try again, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my memory is very vague as to when these things happened. I'd rather do some research, but what I remember generally is that there was a huge floor fight on the floor of the Senate back sometime, I think it was in the earlier mid-80s, over political subdivision salaries, and there was a floor amendment, I think it was Senator Don Moe, to impose a limit of 95% on those local government salaries. There was something outrageous that was going on, and they talked about it, and they put it in, and it's been there ever since. But exactly when that year was, I don't recall. Maybe Greg does.
Mr. Chair, I believe it happened under the Perpich administration. And at the time, I think the first limit was set at 95% of the salary of the Commissioner of Finance, not the governor's salary. And it was amended over time to be a limit on the governor's salary that would apply to local government employees. And as local governments found ways to get around that cap by providing benefits and forms other than salary, the legislature amended the limit to include other compensation as well, including housing allowance, deferred compensation, and the like. So it became an apples and oranges comparison, the compensation of the local government employee compared to the salary of the governor.
Is your inquiry, Senator, directed principally at the local restriction, not the agency head?
Well, maybe I should ask, Mr. Chairman, if other states have, and I don't measure everything we do here by what other states do, but I think it is unusual. And I'm wondering if it is typical that agency heads also have salaries that have a relationship to the governor's. Being capped below the governor's. I don't know, and I don't know how that went historically in Minnesota either, but I don't want to.
My recollection, Senator Scheid, on that front was that there was a great variety and range of individual salary levels for various agency heads. The council was supposed to look at the question of value, worth, comparison, and so forth. It seemed to be a superhuman kind of assignment. It was almost looked to us like it was being abdicated to us. We didn't have the wherewithal to do it. And I can't recall how the wisdom of the 95-85 came about, but it seemed to be a lot more sensible than what had existed before. And that may not be a very erudite explanation. Ms. Meyerly?
Mr. Chair, the memo that we have in the handout on the House Research Short Subjects lists a number of agencies, but there are additional agency heads, primarily, I think, licensing boards, that aren't appearing on here. How are their salaries calculated, and how do they fit into the information, the tables that we have here?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Meyerly, the salaries for the heads of those various boards are set in a different compensation plan called the managerial plan. That's established by the commissioner of the Department of Employee Relations.
Anything further on this front? If not, would you explain who we've invited to appear today, testify?
Mr. Chair and members, we've invited representatives of each of the offices whose salaries this council can make recommendations about. We invited a representative. Commissioner Ludeman is going to be speaking for the administration and the governor. We extended invitations to the state auditor, to the Secretary of State, and to
court system.
And we also extended an invitation to the courts. The courts concluded that they wouldn't be ready to testify today. They would like to be able to present testimony at a second meeting of the council. The constitutional officers, other than the governor, have indicated that they don't have a need to present testimony to the council.
So we've heard from no one other than Department of Employee Relations and the judiciary. We're hearing from Commissioner Ludeman next. And then in terms of input testimony, we will, at our next meeting, perhaps the last, we'll see, hear from the judiciary. That kind of the rough outline? Commissioner Ludeman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it. In visiting with my compensation manager, I think Mr. Hubinger had the facts right as far as we understand them, as far as the history of the 95% cap. It started out as a percentage of the finance commissioner's salary and evolved from during that period of time. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to visit with you a little bit today. The convening of the Compensation Council is a timely and important function, and it's an opportunity to examine the status of certain compensation issues relating to state government, and we certainly appreciate its convening. I do know that the governor appreciates the participation of all members of the council for this work, and I express that to you as well. We trust that the council's recommendations will be well considered and seriously received. Mr. Chairman and members of this council, though I am familiar with the statutory responsibilities of the council as outlined by several members of folks as resources to this council today, and understand the parameters of the positions of which we're talking about today. But if I may, I wish to briefly broaden the discussion to a more general view of compensation, perhaps before we begin the conversation on the specific issues at hand. Most generally, I believe we should remind ourselves that compensation, by every definition in total, is a fundamental cornerstone of modern society. We understand that. It is a measure of the value we place in our work, as seen both by the employer and the employee, by both the board and the director, and by both the public and the public official. The total compensation picture includes the financial remuneration, certain benefits associated with employment, but as well it includes the value and satisfaction that we receive in the work that we do, the recognition, the trust, the respect, and the responsibilities that we earn in the workplace. These values are certainly found in the public sector and in this state government. Many people work in public service for any combination of these reasons. They believe they are making a living and giving something back to the public. In other words, making significant contribution to to the betterment of our state. We believe this, too, and are worthy, and that they are worthy of the respect and recognition beyond pay itself. Mr. Chairman and members, I do believe that these fundamentals of public service compensation are important to express and to understand as we press on toward the realities of the current public issues. As much as a competitive marketplace determines the capacity of the private sector to employ and compensate CEOs, managers, and all employees, the state of Minnesota has pressures too. The public sector will not reach the same level of risk and reward often seen in the private sector, but it too reaches boundaries which are just as real. Citizens, voters, and taxpayers, which are often the same people, are indeed the public being served, and their capacity to sustain the whole of government is an important boundary. As to the compensation that we're talking about today, Mr. Chairman and members, the total compensation for public employees in Minnesota over the last 30 years have increased at a pace that is equal to or higher than inflation. During the last round of bargaining, which has been referenced to already in one relationship to judicial pay, during this last round of bargaining, the parties agreed to no across-the-board increases for state employees. This was a difficult agreement for all parties. However, it is important to note that those not at the top of their range did continue to receive steps or what we call progression increases. Even this part of the agreement cost the state millions of dollars and forced agencies to reduce the workforce. Under the circumstances, many of which still exist, this was the best possible agreement at the time. We work hard to recognize the dedication and service provided by the state's workforce. These are the facts generally about compensation known over the last several years. As to the compensation at issue today, the governor's salary, agency heads, the governor is not recommending any increases for state agencies' heads or any of the state's constitutional officers. The state is still spending more than it is taking in, and until we have our spending under some control, we must be careful in mortgaging our future. While our economy is improving, we still have not caught up with existing pressure on the budget. Our administration has pledged to the taxpayers that we will hold the line on tax increases. With that in mind, we must balance two facts affecting the future regarding compensation. First, we cannot oblige ourselves to payment of future wage increases without having some predictability of a future revenue stream. And secondly, we are competitive in the occupational market, and our turnover rate in the state of Minnesota and for the larger S, the state of Minnesota, is still below the overall state and nationwide averages. In summary, the posture of the state has been to hold salaries by giving zero across-the-board increases, and this does set an example. It would be very difficult for us to change our position and take the lid off for other state employee salaries for any departments or divisions of state government. We believe when the budgets of state government are continually being tested, it is especially important to maintain a balance between the quality employees and the fiscal propriety. Most average citizens believe in curbing government costs as much as possible, and they will often see compensation increases for top officials as first evidence for failure to do so. Recruitment and retention for these positions have not recently or currently become an urgent problem. Candidates for all positions, that's elected or appointed, remain in plentiful supply. Qualifications of these candidates remain of high Minnesota quality. We have not seen exodus of officials, managers, or public employees generally. We believe much of this can be attributed to the value component of public service referenced earlier. Mr. Chairman, in summary, we advise this council to recommend restraint on compensation rates requiring statutory change. I must also add, Mr. Chairman, that Mr. Hubinger is your most valuable resource for this committee in getting information and resourcing information for your deliberations. I should add, though, that the Department of Employee Relations is at your service. Mr. Paul Larson, the Deputy Commissioner, Jill Pettis, the manager of our Compensation Division, is here today and would provide you with any more specific information that you may want. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions of the Commissioner? Senator Langseth?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, you mentioned setting an example In the legislature, it'll be from 1995 to 2007 at the earliest, or 12 years, there's been a 5% increase. Who has followed that example?
I think I see your point, Mr. Chairman, Senator Langseth. Who has held the line at 5% over the last 7 years?
Well, it'll be 12 years.
Or 12 years.
So I've heard that we should set an example, but I don't see anybody following the example.
Well, I believe you have, Mr. Chairman. I believe legislature has set the example, and we're trying our best to follow it.
Commissioner, how should we interpret precisely your recommend that you urge the commission council to recommend restraint?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the restraint is reflective of the settlements and the recommendations that we're seeing is the fact that we think compensation is at an adequate level for these top official positions and would recommend no increases.
If this council does nothing, then presumably there's no guide if that's the effect of what we normally do for action in years 07, 08, and the first half of 09?
Well, up to, but not including 09, I believe. That would be true, Mr. Chairman. It would be true of 07 and 08.
Okay, I was thinking of the biennium.
Right.
And it's difficult to project what the state of the economy and the employment market is going to be looking ahead that far. Being mindful of restraint at the same time, if this council were to recommend something, there's no obligation on the part of the legislature to follow it, as has been practiced before. But failure to recommend something, if the judgment of this group looking ahead says 10 years without an adjustment for the governor perhaps is too risky, there'd be no obligation to necessarily appropriate funds to follow through.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Others? Senator Artman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, thank you for coming today. I have two questions, actually. The first one is the governor's recommendation, does it apply to all branches, or just is he making a recommendation with respect to the executive branch?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, that's a good question. I think we are more obliged to speak to the governor's salary and agency heads. If you were asking the governor's opinion, which I'm reflecting today, he would prefer that this be the broader view across all branches of state government. Now, keep that in perspective. This is about the legislature has much to say about what they're going to do about the legislature and the judiciary and agency heads and the governor's salary. I'm reflecting the governor's view about, I guess, the view of across the board of state government in these positions.
All right. And, Mr. Chair, if I may continue.
Please.
I thought I heard you say that public employee salaries have risen faster than the rate of inflation over the last
Total
number of years.
Compensation, Senator.
My question is, do you have any information as to how those salaries would compare to the increases for private employees in Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I think that is the comparison that we actually are drawing, that state total compensation, it's important to remember this is a total compensation picture, has outpaced inflation. Has it done relative to the private sector? Would we have that available right now, Jill?
Not specifically.
Excuse me, Senator. You can sit here. This is Jill. Mr. Chairman, this is Jill Pettis, manager of our compensation division.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair, committee member, Senator. We feel that the state positions have kept up with the market in when we compare total compensation of our positions with the private sector.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, if I may continue, is that when I first heard the comment, I thought it was in relation to the public employees as bargaining units, and I'm wondering if your conclusion also applies to agency heads, judicial branch judges, constitutional officers, legislators.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, you have the graphs and the graphics in front of you. I think that's going to be a hard calculation to make. You can see the fit and start process of compensation increases, whether it be legislators, the judicial branch, or agency heads. If you did the sort of across the board over any given period of time, you would say that agency head compensation, for example, hasn't been has probably exceeded the private sector by a percentage basis, but the number of dollars hasn't been terribly excessive. Certainly legislative salaries are very compressed over a longer period of time. The average yearly increase for legislators would be very, very small. I served with Senator Langseth even a few more years ago when it was $16,500 a year. Senator Scheid would remember those days, too.
I did have one more, Commissioner.
Please, Senator.
Or Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner, I'm wondering, can you tell us how our officers, legislators, and judges compare to others in other states? And as the increases have passed over many years?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I have that information. I don't have it right here.
I think we have in our... Mm-hmm. We're going to be hearing on the judiciary at our next meeting. I think it's been customary for the judiciary to include... was Mr. Agee from McAllister who does an annual survey of this, and we'll have that information at our next meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I would provide Mr. Hubinger, perhaps, with the National Association of Personnel Officer Association has comparable information for a comparable agency head.
On agency heads, and I think there is the term we have now, isn't it? Has that been distributed?
Or do you have the something similar?
That was the email.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, we distributed in the email packet to you last week a survey that was done by the Council of State Governments. Okay. We have a larger copy here that's actually more legible, and we'll distribute that. We did one check as staff. In 1998, when the governor's salary was last increased, the governor's pay was fourth highest in the country.
Now it's 20th?
It's 16th.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Stanek?
Commissioner, question following up on Senator Ortman's question. Just isolating for a minute the governor's salary and legislative salaries, taking the others out for a minute, I think we can safely conclude that with the governor's salary not being increased since 98, the legislature not being increased since 99, whether compared to bargaining units of state government, private sector, or inflation, neither the governor's salary or legislative salaries have kept pace. Do you agree with that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stanek, I believe that would be true.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
What I conclude from Representative Erickson, welcome.
Thank you. I had a couple bills up, and I had to, you know, wait in line, so
certainly.
I apologize. They were supposed to be heard at 12:30, so I would have been here on time. Commissioner, do you compare legislative salaries, for example, Minnesota's, to a comparable state in which the legislature is a part-time? Have you ever done a study of that, or do you know if maybe NCSL or the Council of State Governments has done that so we can draw a comparison there?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, I think Mr. Hubinger would be far the better expert on legislative pay and its comparisons with other states.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we haven't done any explicit review of Minnesota's salaries for legislators compared to other states. It's hard to get a grasp of how long they meet and what kind of interim activities they have, so it's very hard to gauge that. We could do a straightforward summary of what base salary is. That may be helpful to you. Okay, we can do that.
Please.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Hubinger, I would think the national, you know, the council, NCSL and State Government Council of State Governments could help us.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langseth.
If we were to compare ourselves with North Dakota, theirs is $300 a year. However, they pay per diem, that's $100 and some a day. So I think making comparisons, you'd have to look at total compensation.
For the benefit of those who aren't legislators, can somebody explain exactly how per diem works?
Get paid so much a day for legislative work. or during the session, or
this is additional compensation for days expended on the job.
Yeah.
Other in addition, there's reimbursement of expenses, living and
correct. Some of it.
And the current per diem rate is what, please?
66.
66.
66 a day.
Some take it, and some don't.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and you can take up to that amount, and you can take it for 7 days a week, 5 days a week, 4 days a week. You know, we each decide differently.
What have we, Ms. Leidig?
Has there been an increase in other compensation for legislators since 99, health benefits or per diem? Has that increased?
Mr. Chair, the per diem has increased $10 a day since 99.
With reference to Ms. Leidig's question, any other elements of compensation been changed in that period?
Mr. Chair, in the House, the compensation for those of us who live more than 50 miles from the Capitol for housing has changed, and that's done in our Rules Committee in the House. But that has increased because there was a time 2 and 3 years ago when housing costs in St. Paul escalated. Well, now there's a glut of apartments, so it's a little different. But so that has changed. And maybe Representative Bradley has further clarification.
Representative Bradley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, however, you can still only be reimbursed for your actual expenses,
yes,
your actual out-of-pocket expenses, just that the maximum changed. I think the only thing that you might say is somewhat discretionary is that per diem, and outside of those expenses, that does sort of cover your daily, and you can decide for yourself whether that's what all that covers.
Would it be helpful, useful to this council if those changes could, from the last time that salaries have been adjusted, would be compiled? Mr. Eggler?
Mr. Chairman, one of the questions that comes to mind is, of course, all of the other, we call them ancillary benefit levels that have, I believe, continued to ratchet up, such as health insurance and those other kinds of expenses. But what kind of compensation, and we talked about total value in the economic side of the package. The salary is obviously one specific number, but the rest of the package, what has that changed over the last years in addition to per diem?
Can we compile that? Okay, we will do so for the benefit. We'll distribute it. We get it. Either that or we'll have it at our next meeting, but it'll be accomplished.
To that last question, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Please.
That's a good point, and I think you should know that the legislature is billed as an independent billing unit for the state employee group insurance plan, of which they are a member. The governor is a member. Agency heads are a member. And that is constantly changing it over time. The cost-sharing relationship of legislators or state employees is always in a constant change every 2 years. For example, you could argue that legislators are paying more for their insurance over the last 2 years than they were previous, although the state's contribution toward it has also increased.
Ms. Marley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, rather than focusing on the dollars, I think one of the things that has struck me, as has been alluded to, is kind of the fit and start nature of the legislature's acceptance of the council's recommendations. Has the governor expressed or have given you any guidance on whether the function of the council actually is fulfilling its intended legislative purpose, and should we be considering some recommendation relative to the work of this council?
Mr. Chairman, I think for all the council to understand that the governor appreciates the convening of the council and to actually take its best measure of what the right recommendations are. The governor, I think, is most anxious to sort of is to convey that the budget pressures, which certainly the legislators in this room are familiar with, I think every citizen is familiar with, and the last state settlement and future state settlements are certainly not instructive for significant increases in top official salaries. And so that's the point to make here. Whether this council wants to make recommendations is certainly the business of this council. What the legislature does with those recommendations and what the governor does with the legislature's recommendations, I guess, is something that would all be in the realm of your consideration.
What I'm taking from your testimony is that up to date, the current level of compensation for the governor and agency heads is such that it has not inhibited recruitment, imperiled retention, or diminished quality as of now. At the same time, it's very difficult to look ahead 3 or 4 years. Is that fair?
That's a very good way to put it, Mr. Chairman. But the current measure of recruitment and retention, which is sort of the scientific element of compensation, whether it's at the right level or not, does not show to be a significant problem to this date.
One other issue we touched on, this matter of 95% limit local officials to the governor's salary. I don't know whether that's an appropriate subject for exploration here or whether it's even feasible, but I do think one of the councils we dealt with somehow the limitation on the Minsky chairs in the relationship to the governor. And didn't we recommend or do something? I think it ultimately was changed. I'm not sure as a result of the commission, but at least it was viewed as an appropriate subject for exploration. If so, or whether it is or not, is this local limitation something that, in your judgment, is worth exploration by this group?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hubinger would probably tell you and Senator Scheid that we've had actually studies commissioned, and Subcommittee on Employee Relations has had study. We've had testimony. This is an exasperating issue in many ways, but the governor supports the continuance of the 95% salary cap for local governments. I think that the question is the application of it. There's been some ideas about the interpretation of total compensation and sort of a better relationship of this apples-to-apples issue that was talked about a little earlier. So there's maybe some tweaks, but I don't know if that's necessarily this compensation council. If it wants to deal with that as a auxiliary recommendation, I suppose you could take that on. I don't think it necessarily has standing with its recommendation to the legislature, but it might be instructive.
Anybody recall any previous history on that with reference to Minsky?
Well, the chancellor, of course, is exempt from the.
But it wasn't it. She wasn't at one point, Mr. Shaver.
Mr. Chairman, in the mid-90s, Governor Carlson was so exercised about this, he appointed a special blue ribbon task force, of which I had the misfortune of co-chairing. And that was along with Auditor Dutcher. That was the spasm of response at the time. And there was no conclusion to come out of it. Not in a negative way. It's just as you know, Commissioner Ludeman points out, it's very awkward. It's sort of like money in campaign finance. It flows and finds a way.
Okay. Anything further, Commissioner Ludeman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If not, thank you very much, sir. Discussion. I don't know, just to attempt to lead this off, what we're looking at, the way I size it up, is whether this council wants to tackle anything in relationship to looking forward to the salary of the governor. Legislature and the judiciary. I don't know whether that encompasses it or not, but for initial discussion, Mr. Stanek, please.
Well, first of all, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to observe from my friend Mr. Shaver that if the Blue Ribbon Task Force recommendations were not implemented, having been a person who served on this compensation council a few times, you'll fit in right in here because our experience is about the same. Having said that, I do want to just frame up one issue for the members, and the information is contained in the materials, but as the only person I think who is a carryover from the 2001 Compensation Council, I would simply observe that at that time, our recommendation, unanimous of that group, which means governors, appointees, legislators, and appointees of the Supreme Court, were that the governor's salary be increased by 7.5% January 1st, 2001, 2.5% the following year, 3% in 2003, and 3% in 2004. And, of course, none of those recommendations were implemented or acted on. One of the things of the Compensation Council, I think, historically, was it was viewed as a group of citizens, legislators, appointees of the courts that could get together and make recommendations about our view on what's the right thing to do, realizing it's then going to be left to the elected officials to implement. And I would just suggest to those members of this Compensation Council that a lot of that discussion, at least with regard to the increases that were proposed on in 01, 02, 03, 04 related to the governor's office, had a lot to do with the then occupant of the governor's office. And some feeling that perhaps the then governor was generating some income outside being governor, and there wasn't a need to increase that. I would suggest that as we engage in a discussion about whether $120,000 not increased since 1998 for the governor of the state, an individual who is running a multi-billion dollar enterprise here in the state of Minnesota, we should try to have a discussion that is not related to the current occupant. And I will state for the record that I think these past increases were appropriate, and we should increase the governor's salary as part of our recommendations. It wouldn't be fair to talk about this with relation to the governor and the past compensation councils without also noting that the 2001 committee recommended that the 99 recommendations of 5% increase for the legislature on January 1st, 2001 go into effect, followed by a 2.5% increase in 2002 and 3% in 2003 and 2004. Also, those recommendations were not acted on. I think if you look at the herky-jerky nature of pay increases, we've got to a place in this state where we're starting to get it right with the judiciary, which is to say some modest, regular increases. And I wanted to just point out to the members that the 99 and 2001 recommendations with regard to the governor and with regard to the legislative branch were not acted on, and I think we need to seriously examine those recommendations and make some form of recommendation for an increase for the governor and the legislature this year at a minimum. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Artman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think that when I look at the chart, I see everyone is tied to someone else's salary. And I think that the legislature, we may want to consider tying the legislators' salaries to the salary level of the governor, comparing the duties, the time commitment. It's something to consider, I would hope, by this compensation council, because recommendations regarding legislative salaries, and I can't be the first one to notice this, get completely bogged down in politics. And I think that I would hope that this council would consider some kind of percentage basis so that when we adjust one, we adjust all state offices as well as agency heads and legislators to kind of get around some of that. Because unlike Commissioner Ludeman, I do believe that it is starting to have an impact on the candidates. I think it's starting to have an impact on the ability of legislators to do their work and also find meaningful compensation outside of the legislature. And I think that it's becoming a challenge. If we waited until 2009, I think we would see some major impact, at least in the legislature. So I hope that this council will be mindful of that and consider making that adjustment in some way. And that's a bigger issue than just do we tie it to make it a percentage of the governor's salary. The bigger issue was, you know, how do we pick a percentage? How do we evaluate what's done here? So I that would be my proposal that council, this council, consider that.
Thank you, Senator. Do you have a suggestion as to how we might explore this? What's 31 roughly is what of 120? Somebody quick. Yeah, roughly, yeah.
25%.
25%.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do think you can also look at the time commitment, and as opposed to what is the salary now compared to what is the governor's salary, versus looking at how much time do legislators spend here at the Capitol, how much do they spend at home working on issues, and I think that would be a fair question. There are experts here, more experts than me, who, in fact, all of the legislators here have served longer than I have and have much more information about that, but there are a couple of different ways of coming about that.
Thank you. Senator Langseth?
Mr. Chair, you know, I think in the legislative process, you kind of want a legislature that's somewhat reflective of the population. What I've noticed in the Senate, when I came to the Senate, I was 43 years old, which is a while ago now. The median age was 43. Now, the median age hasn't grown old quite as fast as I have, but it's gotten up there. I don't know what it is now, but it's well into the 50s. And what's happening is that more and higher percentage of the people serving in the Senate are people whose children have grown up and are out of the nest. And they can, you know, compensation, if they want to be there, compensation isn't quite so important. And I was talking to a fellow here the other day that needs to spend some time around here, and I said he should run for the legislature. And he said, I can't take the $20,000 cut in pay. So I think there's more and more people, particularly those in the process of raising their families, simply can't serve. And I don't think we should have a situation in Minnesota where just a large number of people can't serve because of the financial situation.
Would you suggest something similar to what Senator Artman was proposing? Or?
Well, I don't know, whatever works, I guess. I'm not sure if that's the way to do it or not, but obviously, you know, if he was just to go 2.5% a year since from 95 to up to 2007, and even take out the 5%, you would be talking a 25% increase. And I don't know if politically we can handle that or not, but just to get back to where we were as far as purchasing power, it would probably take somewhere in the area of 25% increase. So I think somehow we've got to figure out a way that... But, yeah, I know how it's worked in the past. When we had a, many years ago, pretty sizable increase to try to catch up.
Yeah.
And then people say, well, I didn't get a 20% increase last year. Well, that had probably been for many years. I think we really made a mistake not continuing just so much every year to just kind of keep the inflation going. But
the whole purpose of the installation of this council was to try to ameliorate some of the political implications. And as Mr. Watson suggested, we've only been modestly successful, but that shouldn't deter us in a sense. Mr. Jones?
Being new to the council, I've watched and listened. I think if you look at the compensation levels in 1995, the judges have progressed reasonably, but the legislators have not. I think the complexities of government have changed and continue to accelerate, and I think there's a need for salaries to be competitive so you can get the right people here to run government. We talked about per diem. I don't think per diem is really appropriate from a compensation standpoint because there's no relationship to compensation. That's simply a pass-through and is not reflected in their compensation. There's another effect of the limitation of other agencies based upon the cap that affects other agencies' ability to attract talent and compete in the private sector. So I think we need to really go back and benchmark and get the legislature in step from a compensation standpoint so it recognizes the value of the people that are here. So I don't know what the right process is, but we need to acknowledge the fact that compensation have not kept in pace with the economic times, inflation, and also the retirement benefits are not being adjusted with the compensation level remaining basically essentially the same since 1995.
Thank you. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I leave, sort of two factors. One is whether or not the compensation, for example, for legislators has kept up with inflation, and you could easily argue that one. The other one, which is a little bit harder, is just sort of what the workload looks like. And at least in my 11th year here, it is changing dramatically. And I don't know how long we can continue to hold to sort of hiring citizen legislators in an environment where I can tell you being in certain chairmanship positions is more than a full-time job. And how to quantify that exactly is a dilemma, but it is a reality. I mean, I happen to be a product of having had a prior career and doing this, but I can't imagine if I had a young family and a counter career how in the world I could take this responsibility. And I suspect there's other people sitting here that would sort of see that similarly. And as we think, I think we have to think beyond just the sort of the inflationary factor, and that is sort of what capacity do we want when we try to recruit people for what responsibilities. And there is a factor. We have one sort of kicker. We have, I think it's a 40% for the leadership. But we don't have any consideration for chairmanships, for example, and it might just complicate the world even more, but it is a reality in the legislative roles that there are responsibilities that take considerably more of people's time.
You know, since, Representative Bray, this is the trickiest of all, and to try to come up with something that's reasonable, sensible, and yet has some kind of credibility and possibility of being implemented is
Mr. Kraft,
a challenge. I think we're hearing is from all of you is that this is an area that needs some further consideration, exploration.
And Mr. Chair, although I sort of feel some attraction to Senator Ortman's idea, I'm not as enthralled by that because I think we ought to be more responsible. The most difficult part, of course, is I'm chairman of the Health Committee. We're trying to balance budgets. In the time of doing that, to make any kind of public statement whereby we're going to get more compensation is death toll.
Yeah.
And how to separate that is I don't know. I mean, we do, by virtue of none of us can benefit in this biennium, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the way that gets spun politically, media-wise, and so forth, we all know. That's the reality.
But excuse me, make sure I understand. You're somewhat intrigued with Senator Ortman's proposal, but you're...
Actually, Mr. Chair, I'm not really too warm to that proposal. I think we just need to look realistically at where the compensation ought to be in our current environment, comparing with other states, looking at responsibility growth, all those factors, and try to come up with what we think are reasonable figures. And if you just tie it to if, in fact, we migrate to an environment, I'm not advocating this, but if we migrate to an environment where we're a full-time legislature, that wouldn't be accommodated by that kind of sort of simple percentage notion.
I'll see the chair of the Minnesota of the Metropolitan Council now. Was it 50% of the governor?
Mr. Chair, the maximum is 95% of the salary of the governor.
Metropolitan Council?
Yeah. For the chair? Or for the executive director?
No, it's probably...
Oh, well, I'm off.
Mr. Chair, on the chart we received, the current salary of the chair of the Metropolitan Council is $58,489. Commissioner Ludeman indicated that the maximum that position could have is $114,000, if I understood it correctly, but I don't know why the policy has been to have the chair's salary so much lower than all the other cabinet agencies.
Great.
Mr. Chair, and members, the maximum of the salary range for the Metro Council chair is that position is in Group 2, so the maximum is $102,000. My understanding is that the Met Council chair is a part-time position.
And I had some recollection it was a 50%er, and I was only using that as an example of somebody that's not full-time that was related to the governor's salary, of looking at the legislature possibly. Well, where do we go from here? Ms. Ladig.
I had a question regarding the Metropolitan Airport Commission salary, which is $20,000. Could you explain...
Why?
Yeah, the differential between that and the Metro Council chair.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Ladig...
Less part-time.
That's exactly right. It's got a smaller salary range because it's considered part-time. I can't even remember what percentage time it is for a position.
Well, there may not be any relevance of that to the legislature and being part-time or what have you, but that's one of the things clear from this discussion that ought to be explored. We are scheduled for one more meeting. We don't have any further testimony today, and our next meeting, which will come in March at a time, maybe we can decide today. We will hear from the judiciary and lay some things on the table, subject to input from all of you. Ms. Myerly?
Mr. Chair, I think to follow up the conversation that we just had from our legislators, it would help me if we could get a sense if there are formulas out there that other states have adopted or whether the predominant way legislators' compensation is set is simply by picking a number and dealing with the political vagaries. But if there are some mechanisms or formula out there, I think it would help me at least in looking at those.
Is that doable?
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, I have... The original intent of this council was to have people from the outside, and Lord knows that's where I am. 2 hours ago, I wasn't sure where this building was. But I do have about 10 years' experience in the compensation arena on a global basis, and it's, and I understand from the discussion up to this point that there are constraints within the budgeting process. I also understand that there have been additional pressures with the jobs, and I understand that there have been large amounts of time was without the increases that have been previously recommended. But again, my perspective is from the corporate arena, and I would say you cannot continue that without pressures finding their way to the foreground very quickly on you. Which says for me, and this is the bewildering part, we talk about the job, but I don't see the reference point. I don't see the comparative analysis. Now, it may be somewhere in that eye chart that you provided us that it's there, but at the same time, you have the individual jobs. What are they compared to? We kind of talk about a general feeling about what the increase could be comparative against an inflationary trend within the state and project that and magically for the next 2 to 3 years. Again, these jobs, forgive me, my reference point is the corporate arena. You make a reference to a job category, and then you compare to that job category to find out what your competitive market is. And maybe that's very foreign to the public sector, and it's not possible. But are those kinds of things available? With, for example, pick legislators. Yes, there was an agreement or some discussion around we have difficulty comparing days, what have you. Truly, within the last 15 years, the comparison is primarily on the total compensation arena. But you should have something in the way of comparative analysis, recent comparative analysis, and maybe it is in those charts, around the agency heads that would help. In other words, give some credibility and authority for the projections and recommendations coming out of this council. And if something else, to develop the procedures for having that base of authority to make a projection. Right now, and forgive me if I'm missing it, you know, I've been in retirement for 2 years, so maybe not all the brain cells are working. But at the same time, it says, without that comparative base, I don't know how you make projections other than out of a gut feel somewhere.
Well, sir, we do have comparisons with the governors of all the states, and as we pointed out,
where he had slipped, 14 points or something.
Yep, and as Mr. Stanek points out, this is a $28 billion operation. Then again, public service does have differentiation from the corporate sector. What would you suggest we do? We do have analysis that compares West with other states.
Do we have analysis, and maybe I've seen it, that compares this state of Minnesota and the various agency heads with other states? We do have that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Love to see it. Then. I don't know. Was that in the eye test?
That was in the email.
It was in the eye test.
Couldn't find it then. And how recent
that's
is that?
Be,
but not legislative.
That's going to be emboldened?
We have larger print copies here.
Larger print copies.
Yeah. Good.
Use magnifying glass.
Find a large magnifying glass for it, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Durda. Anyone else? Well, as what I've summarized, what we're talking about for the next meeting seem to generally meet with your approval. How we deal with this legislative matter, we'll try some different things. In the meantime, if you have suggestions, please contact either Mr. Hubinger or me, and we'll circulate and see where we're heading. And the same thing with question of the governor's salary and comparisons. And on the judiciary, as we've been pointed out, we've made steady progress. At the same time, being a Supreme Court appointee, I'm mindful of the fact that there is a modest difference. I don't know what degree it's different, but it is modest in that those who come onto our judiciary hopefully, presumably, do so as a lifetime career. They're here for the balance of their career. And there are no step changes there either. Whatever the rate is, stays that rate for as long as they're there, no matter how effective they are. There is perhaps that difference in those who come into elected office and don't perhaps foresee spending their lifetime here. Mr. Durda.
Mr. Chairman, is it within the framework of this council to offer policy For example, where the position, the competitive position should be relative to the external market?
Yes, it is. We tried that before and weren't very successful. That's why we ended up ultimately with this 95-85 sequence, because the skills weren't here in this council to do it, and I don't believe the Department of Employee Relations at that time discouraged us from going in that direction. Would that be fair, Commissioner Ludeman, or your colleagues? We can try, but I don't know where we go for the talent to do it objectively and convincingly. And there doesn't seem to be a problem now with reference to the stratification there. Is that fair, sir?
No, we don't hear a problem.
We see.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, if I may just for a moment.
Please.
Mr. Chairman and members of this council, one of the problems is the direct comparisons with the private sector is that the Commissioner of Human Services in the state of Minnesota runs a $14 billion budget. To make a direct comparison with a private sector comparison of a $14 billion business just doesn't work quite that way. Some of that isn't necessarily under his direct control as a CEO would of a private corporation. But that's sort of where you get into. If we're going to go down that road, our best guess would be to make comparisons with the commissioners of human services departments in other states. That's the best comparison we're going to be able to make.
Which this chart does.
And so that I'm not sure where you were headed exactly, but I think that we could draw other comparisons to try to get a better relationship. But as I said off the microphone here, we haven't really had any troubles with this proportional relationship of agency head salaries, for example, to what the governor makes. We may argue about what the governor makes as an appropriate salary or not, but this 85-95 and differential doesn't seem to be a big problem. The trouble is you'll never get to a direct comparison with the private sector for a variety of reasons.
Thank you. Ms. Miley?
Mr. Chair, and yet I think the philosophy being if we don't have the ability to compare directly to the private sector job, which may fit the skill set, we do have what other states are doing, and the concept of being comparable and doing a survey and setting this in some frame of reference rather than simply saying, well, are we going to be ignored or not? And deciding that we make our decision on the basis of what we think the political ramifications and receptivity of our recommendations are, I would prefer to have it at least be objective. And then we've done our job.
Chair,
thank you.
Well, Stanek? Just to Mr. Derda's point, I think it's well taken, and I would submit that part of the reason that we've seen some changes in the judiciary salaries is that there was an ability to come in with some credible evidence. As part of Mr. Egge's presentations, he was able to take, for example, going back maybe 6 years ago, what a district court judge or a justice of the Court of Appeals of the Supreme Court was making in Minnesota and comparing that to the Hennepin and Ramsey County attorneys, the U.S. attorney, a starting associate at a law firm in downtown Minneapolis who at one point was making more than a district court judge. And so, you know, there was a persuasive argument that shouldn't we at least pay our judges as much as a first-year associate right out of law school who's appearing in front of these judges. And I think that was part of the reason the judiciary was able to be persuasive in the legislative process is bringing that information to bear. So I think anything that we can do to support the argument for increases by tying it to what others are doing is very powerful information. I'd agree.
Well, particularly in the context of what we talked about that don't go anywhere, and it says, I don't care what your recommendations are going to be, it will go nowhere without credible base. The more that credible base you provide in the way of external reference, the stronger the recommendation can be, and then do what you may with it.
Stebner.
Mr. Chairman, it seems as is a neophyte in this kind of a world where we're in a totally different world legislatively than we are in the corporate world. The risks and reward of the system of business is certainly over the years ebbed and tied with the compensation that would feel in itself a reward, and the governmental service issues are, to me, so functionally different. Do we want a career legislature? Is that continually a subject question here? Do we want individuals? You've noted in the judgeships and that type of thing that's a career, a life change, career opportunity, that type of thing. Is that legislatively? Is that what we want? Is that we want young folks to come in at 35 years of age or 40 years of age and spend the rest of their time in the legislature? Or are we interested in the foundation of our Constitution, I think, which was more of a citizen legislature, where you have a career, you have the trials and tribulations of the rest of the world, and you come in to serve your years of service in the legislative body, and then you go on back to your career and your family and your occupation in that sense? It seems like we're on a preponderance of questions there, and it seems also difficult if we want to talk about the budget responsibilities of the governor and the CEO scenario that he has. How can we conceivably tie some of these other positions to a 95%, an 85%, and that type of thing? Consequentially, doesn't make sense to me to what ultimately the governor, whose head is on the line, I think more readily than the legislative body or the other individuals, we've got quite a different scenario. And so one of my fundamental questions then would be, if we raise the governor $10,000 in salary, what's that going to cost us in the state of Minnesota in our total budget? Because all of the things that we've got built on that, we've got a horrendous amount of compensation and the realization that proliferates through our whole system. So can we tell what that $10,000 raise to the governor is going to be? How does that impact us? And I look at the health insurance scenarios, and I say to the legislatures, well, folks, you're part of the problem. You created some of this mess in the health insurance arena. By some of the mandates and that type of things that you've done with this thing. So the costs have escalated beyond the rest of inflation in society tremendously. And are we looking at a fundamental the fox is in the chicken coop kind of issue with some of this stuff?
I guess my quick answer, can we calculate what $10,000 increase in the salary of the governor would be? Yes, I think we can. Okay. $10,000 for him, and then proportionally more for the other constitutional officers. And the extent to which it would cost any more would be dependent upon whether or not the governor decided to give increases to agency heads. The governor today apparently can give more increases than are authorized before reaching the limits, has chosen for whatever the reason not to do so. Well, I think the reason is clearly limitation in funds. And according to Commissioner Ludeman, the state continues to be led ably in. There's no crisis and no problem. Is that fair, sir?
That's the current situation.
At least we could calculate what 10 would do in one case. I think the whole idea from previous councils we thought was pretty imaginative was to put these scales in there at 95 and 85 and then say it's up to the CEO as to how he or she administers it, and that seems to be good executive direction. Apparently it's worked. Okay. Anything further? Otherwise, what I'd suggest is that if we're going to hear from the judiciary, based on what we're hearing in general input, why don't we try to set up some possible scenarios here, and then we will consult with each of you and just test them and see whether or not there's anything we can move forward. And if not, when we convene, we'll discuss. And the whole purpose of trying to establish something in the interim would be established whether or not we can accomplish our mission in two meetings, this one plus one more, or whether a third is necessary. We need to have our task concluded by April 1. Does that make sense to you? Mr. Derda? Okay, didn't see you nodding. Hazel?
I'm fine.
Fair enough? Ladies? Okay, have you brought calendars?
My understanding that the revenue forecast is the end of February. Commissioner Ludeman, is that about right, sir?
28.
Well, that's useful information to have in hand. What are we looking at? Second week of March, March 7th. Anybody have a problem? What's a preferable day? Does Monday work?
This works. This is a good time.
Monday seems to work. Yes. Senator, is that a good day for legislators by and large?
Yeah, if it's in the afternoon, I think it would be. In the morning, we have sessions.
Well, I think afternoon.
The House has session.
Yes. Well, Ezel?
The 7th, I'll be out of town, so I would not be able to attend. I'll be in San Francisco.
When are you back, sir?
I'll be back on the 8th.
You'll be here on the 8th?
Yes.
Tuesday pose a problem? Two nods on the 8th. Not working. 9th? Problem there. Two problems.
Why don't we go to the next? Other than Monday of that week, I can't do it any other day.
Well, we'll probe further, but tentatively...
Mr. Chair, it appears that I'm the only one that's not available.
Kind of looks that way, possibly.
So I would defer the interest of the collective to say go ahead and meet without me.
We'll consult with you by phone and tell you what we're thinking and see how...
Yes.
...writing with you. Why don't we then go for Monday the 7th? Does 1:30 seem a good time for those of you who come from out of town? Okay, subject to your checking with those who aren't here now, we'll tentatively go for 1:30 on the 7th of March. Anything further to come before this council, this session? If not, entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second? Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.
We confuse or what do we do?
I don't know.